Accession number 18475, Reel 9.
Arnold Baldwin, Reel 9. So you were just saying why this Canadian wanted the German shot.
Yes. Are you recording?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I said to him, if you feel that you want to shoot them, I can't stop you shooting them. But I said, no way am I going to shoot them. I said, I don't believe in shooting prisoners. But I said, I couldn't stop you if you wanted to. It's up to you. Well, he was really bluffing because... having been given the go-ahead, as far as I was concerned, he didn't shoot them. And
I think he gave you an explanation as to why he wanted to shoot them. We've missed that.
Oh, have we? Yes. He said that a lot of his mates had been caught up in the trees, in their chutes, had caught in the branches of the trees, and they'd been dangling there, quite helpless, when the nearest Germans to them had just simply opened up on them and shot them as they hung helpless in the trees. And he was so embittered about this that he wanted revenge. But he seemed to want me to exact that revenge and not do it himself. I said, well, I cannot shoot prisoners. It's not in my thing and I wouldn't do it. Well, he didn't either. So I said to him then, well, where are we? Where are you? Obviously, you must have got mates somewhere near here. So he said, yes, if you follow this path to the side here of the copse, go to that end, which wasn't very far, and turn left. He said, you'll follow a path and you'll come to a house. And there's quite a few of our mates there, my mates. There's also a mixture. There's a few Poles, I believe. And there's a church nearby, and they're using that as a first aid place. So I said, okay, well, come on, Jack. We'll take these two mugs with us, and we'll go down there. So we scrambled up out of this dip, and... march these two round. It's the same old thing. They're very fond on the continent, I think, of having tennis courts practically everywhere and always with a high wire fence round them to obviously keep the balls within the limits. And they've got one there as well, alongside this house, which the Americans had occupied, the Canadians had occupied. So we handed over the two Germans we'd brought round. Then we walked round the house itself and had a look round. And I found two mates of mine from B Squadron were there, Tommy Geary and Arthur Shackleton. They'd obviously landed some distance off the LZ as well as myself. So we more or less hung together, the three of us. There was this chapel or church nearby, and presently a sergeant of the medical corps came across to me. And he said, look, I'm going to get two prisoners out of that compound and I want you to get them to dig graves here, because he said men are dying in this chapel. I've got to get them buried. So I'll get a couple of prisoners and bring them over and you just supervise them digging the trenches. We'll have the graves. We'll have them here, he said. He was a sergeant, I think, in the medical corps, and back he went. He produced two prisoners. Well, one of them was a rat-faced little swine. I think he was a warrant officer of some sort. I couldn't be sure about that because I didn't know too much about German uniforms, but he wasn't a private, I'm pretty sure. and he was the spokesman for the two. Well, the medical corps man had brought a couple of shovels out, and I indicated the shovels, and I said, dig. Well, they wouldn't dig. There was a muttered conversation between them, especially on the part of this rat-faced character. And I gestured with my rifle. I said, come on, dig, you know. And the more I gestured at him like this, the more scared. Well, I think scared. The more he refused to do it. And it suddenly dawned on me. I thought, the bloody bastard. How many people he's made dig their own bloody graves and shot them in their graves, I wonder. Because I had a strong feeling that that's what he feared. He thought that he was going to get the same sort of treatment he'd meted out to others. After a while, this medical corps bloke came out. And, of course, he'd seen no work had been done. And he said, well, what's wrong? Why? I said, I believe that the bastards think they're digging their own graves. So I said, fuck them, let them get on with it. And he said, well, no, he said, I've got to have these graves dug. And then he spoke to these blokes in perfect German and assured them that there was nothing to worry about. They were just digging graves for the... I was horrified. I was so mad at him because he spoke... It was quite illogical, really. But I was absolutely mad at him because he spoke German, and I said, well, what are you, a bloody Nazi yourself? You know, I said something like that. I was in a fit of rage, I think. Anyway, they did get on with digging the graves, and in the end we were relieved, and we wandered back to this house. What I have to tell you after this is really not of any military significance at all, but I thought rather funny. As I say, I found at least two of my old mates, and I think they'd got their RAF second pilots with them, same as I had mine. So we were a group of six. But the Canadians had commandeered this house in the first place, and we were left to have the basement. Well, there was no lighting in the basement. A certain amount of bedding had been pulled off beds upstairs and slung down on the basement floor. How many men finally were in the basement, I don't know. But for the rest of the day, we were up and about, and I don't know where we got food. We must have done. One or two German civilians came by. They seemed to go in the church and out again. Middle-aged people, or elderly. I was walking round this house, just surveying it. You could always follow, you knew where Canadians were because you just followed the trail of chicken feathers. They were very quick to grab chickens wherever they went, and they were in the cook pot before you could say Jack Robinson. Well, I went round the back of the house, and it was quite a fine, warm, sunny day, and the window was open, the ground floor window. It was fairly high sill, and I saw an alarm clock on it. Well, my father-in-law, who of course was working in a shipyard in Poole, his alarm clock had conked out. And you couldn't buy an alarm clock in England at that time for love nor money. And he was always in trouble because he had to get to work and he had no means of rousing himself. He was always moaning to me whenever he saw me that he couldn't get an alarm clock, and I suddenly saw this one on this cell, and I thought, I'll have that. Well, of course, I know what it was used for. The Canadians had put it on the sill, and they were setting the alarm for their guard duty is two on and two off, or four off rather. I thought, well, my need is greater than theirs, or at least the father-in-law's is. So I crept very cautiously past the window and lifted this clock off the sill. And I was wearing what we used to call jumping jackets. They had large pockets and camouflage tunics. They had large pockets in them. So I shoved this clock in one of the pockets. Unfortunately for my life, I never I wasn't seen by the Canadians, because I think they'd have just as soon killed me as not. At any rate, when it came to nightfall, most people had already gone down into this basement, which was pitch black, absolutely pitch black. And I went down there, and it was impossible to move without treading on someone. It was really rough. So you had to test very carefully with each time you moved a foot to see that you weren't stepping on someone. I was trying to find a vacant place where I could bed down, or lie down rather, and all of a sudden there was this buzzing noise started, and several shouted out, "It's booby trapped, it's booby trapped." And there was a real panic in the dark. And then I realised that this buzz was coming from my pocket. It was this alarm clock that was coming. So I said, settle down, it's all right. It's me. I said, I've got something in my pocket that's making that noise. Anyway, I think it was during that day, it might have been the following day, before we joined a column marching back and crossing the river over to Vesle, I think it was. No, it wasn't Vesle. It was a small place beginning with T, like Twisterden or something, I can't quite recall the name. But before we left, I spoke to my friend Arthur Shackleton, and I said, well, I've won something out of this trip, Shack. I said, I've got an alarm clock. Well, we were in the house at the time, in a ground floor room, and there was a fine electric clock on the wall. And Shack said to me, see that then? So I said, yeah. He said, I'm having that home. So I said, oh, yes. So he said, oh, yeah, I'm having that. So our looting was very minor compared with the German looting. Anybody picked up what they could. Not long after the war, well, we crossed the river and we came home. I think we drove back down to Brussels this time. Yes, we did. We went to Brussels and we flew home to Lyme in Kent from Brussels airfield. And Shackleton, although he was a Yorkshireman, I still see him, he's a good friend. He was at that time living in Bournemouth, still is. But as I'd gone down to Bournemouth on a leave, I called round to see Shackleton. I suppose it was leave after we got back from the Rhine crossing. And I went in with Shack. And he looked up at the wall and he said, you recognise it? And there was the electric clock mounted on the wall. I said, oh, you managed it then, Shack. Quite amused me. Though you could say that for me the war ended on a happy note.